I'm a man who believed that I died 20 years ago, and I live like a man who is dead already. I have no fear whatsoever of anybody or anything.
Gary Webb. I am an investigative journalist, and in 1996, I wrote a series of stories entitled Dark Alliance, which was about CIA involvement in drug trafficking.
Are you a man who once said death smiles at us all? All a man can do is smile back.
We're both in skull and bone, the secret society.
So sick that we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go on.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the rest.
Number 322. I
sad duty to report this afternoon that my friend and colleague, Tim Russert, collapsed and died early this afternoon.
I may die in this cell tonight or in the arena tomorrow. I am a slave. What possible difference can I make?
And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
What the fuck is up, and welcome to Ari Dead, your weekly, what we call it, it's a variety conspiracy show, with the second portion of this usually being Colin. Not usually, it is Colin. So for, you know, how this guy works, for those popping in just now, we're going to shoot the shit for about an hour, 45 minutes or so, and the second half, we'll open up the lines, and you guys are welcome to call in. If you don't want to call in, we'll shoot the shit with the live chat, so, you know, there's incentive for you guys to post in there. If there's interesting stuff, we might bring it up later. And then for patrons, you guys can call in via via StreamYard, and you can come on via fucking video chat. But yeah, we have Shane Cashman with us today. Obviously, we have Austin with us, as always, on the show. I do want to make note, last week, for those who weren't, I know we changed the day on you guys a little bit. For those who didn't show up, fucking Tanya Ikey called in on that one. That was fucking wild.
Awesome.
Very, very, pretty cool. Yeah, so that's our, I think, second interview in like over a couple decades. So, and both online. So that's pretty cool. I guess that counts to call in. But yeah, Shane, what's up, man? A pleasure to have you. I think a good question, I've been asking the guests this a lot. What did you think of the intro?
The intro is beautiful. Yeah, the intro is beautiful. You guys always have great intros. Tim Russert is a real throwback from my childhood. We only had like five channels growing up, and my dad would flip through all the news in the mornings, like Sunday mornings, and Tim Russert was one of those people. And I when I was watching it, did he die soon after that interview with Bush? Like, because that's what the narrative of the intro makes it sound like. Because, like, did Skull and Bones, are you saying right now that Skull and Bones killed Tim Russert?
There are very suspicious and strange circumstances. I'll tell you that much, right? And
Have you dug into that, Austin?
No, not
okay.
As
when
far as
when I selected
like,
this, I was just I knew that one. I was like, I don't know enough about it. That could just be
right.
A complete coinky dink.
That's
and
yeah, that's
like,
the one I know the
nothing
least
to do
about.
With it. So that's me being, I guess, slightly irresponsible. If you want to look at it that
right.
way, I don't care.
I'm telling everybody that you guys told me Skull and Bones killed Tim Russert because now it makes perfect sense. But I remember where I was when Tim Russert died, actually. And it was like a big day because my dad used to watch him all the time. And I grew up watching all those like Sunday morning Politico shows, which is probably why I'm a political junkie now. But great intro. Always great music. Everything looked good. Love it. Good job. A+.
All right. Credit to At The Thin Line 123. Gua. He's, I think, taking the baton from PsyOps. We talked about this last episode. It looks like our friend PsyOps may be no more. We've had used a lot of intros of his. But if anyone finds out more info, let me know otherwise, because I hope I'm wrong. But He last I heard he was terminal, and it's been months, and no one's heard from him. So I'm sorry to hear that.
I saw you say something about that online. I wasn't sure if you were like referencing him dying or not. That's terrible.
Yeah. No, there was some people who know him, that multiple people said that he was terminal, so that seemed confirmed. And then I knew some people who talked to him regularly, even after he kind of like took a step back from Twitter. And it's been since like December since they've contacted him. Oh. So it's like, damn. You know, you mean, I don't know. You know, when an Anon goes, it's like, you know, I don't know. This is how the word travels. It's not like we're really going to probably know. Right.
He just moved on to his next CIA post.
Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, he could have. I mean, if that was his op, that's fucking dope. So
dope, right. Dope op. Yeah,
that's legit what Thomas said last week. Which, yeah. By the way, he's I heard he's implying that you're Illuminati confirmed, Shane.
Yeah,
defend you yourself.
Episode, yeah. Yo, that was his. he was questioning about being a Freemason, which I'm not. But then I made some hand gesture. I don't even know what it is. I maybe did this or something, and the people were like, "Did you notice?" When Shane was asked, he put his hands up like a Freemason. I'm like, these people are as schizophrenic as I am. Like,
right. God,
it's amazing. But yeah,
you guys see that over there?
Oh God, dude, Jose is fucked now.
You're done. No. To, like cover an eyeball too. I'm like, yo, I'm not doing that shit.
Set up, dude.
That is the worst conspiracy content for me. The ones when they're just like. The like kind of sort of suggestive poses. Some of them are like overt, and I'm like, okay, right. Maybe you got a point there. But it is, you do see some of the really irresponsible ones where just like, oh, he's looking like this on like a fucking paparazzi thing.
Right.
Like,
right.
He's covering one eye that clearly symbolizes blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people that I will see things. I can connect the dots so that should not be connected because I have like issues. I was born that way. But it's funny when it's directed back at you. It's like a nice. Oh, that's dope, you know, because I'm not alone. We're all insane, and it feels good to not be alone.
Definitely. No
well,
doubt.
All right, man, I wanted to talk a little bit about your book. I know you got to, by the way, our producer chimed in the private chat and said it was a year and a half later after that. So confirmed it was 100% to do with it. So
direct the correlation.
You see, if you count out the time and the days, you'll see that it connects. A year and a half is exactly what they do. So
yeah, in a year and a half, that's what like the time for the sun to go around 1.5 times. The sun is super significant in esoteric, you know, realms. So
yeah. Yeah. You should look and see if any celestial events were happening on that day. So yeah, no, that's confirmed. That's dope. But you were saying.
Anyways, I wanted to talk a little bit about your book. I know you started putting out a book. I haven't read the second part. I read the first part. I really don't even know. I liked it, but I don't know what it is yet. You know what I mean? Like the first one, it's like, I don't know what this is. And so I don't know if you have any, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know if that's part of the revelation as it's like the whole idea of dropping it this way is like people, it becomes more revealed what this is as you get further into it. Yeah. But I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, maybe your thought artistically on it, maybe what tropes you're playing on. Because I feel like I did pick up a lot of some of the tropes you were playing with.
There's definitely a lot going on, and it'll probably get weirder for those who've complained about it being weird. But maybe it'll start revealing itself to people. I'm not really one to like answer things when it comes to this stuff. I just aesthetically wanted to do a certain type of storytelling and maybe wrap in a few type of genres in it. But I started writing it like a long time ago. I want to say it was 2013, October 23rd, whenever Kanye released the song Monster. So that's, I heard that song. There's a line in it that like kind of inspired this whole idea. And then I didn't do anything with it because it just seemed like such a big project I didn't have time for. And then I met him. And then I told him about the idea and I was like, well, I want to do this now. So it's just seemed more exciting to serialize something on Twitter. I talked to the author, Bredesen Ellis, who did his own serialization of his own novel recently. He did it on his Patreon. And I like that idea. Something Truman Capote did a long time ago, something Dickens did a long time ago. And I like the idea of the deadline for me to finish something like that. So I'm like every 2 weeks, I got to have something out and it's mostly written, but I keep changing shit right before it goes out, which is kind of exciting. And I have a pretty good idea of where everything's going, but things keep changing. Like the second one, if the first one is weird to people, the second one's probably even weirder, because it's going to jump around in time a lot and goes different places. And I'm not really like giving people a lot of context, just because like that's what I like. I like to be confused at a lot.
Yeah,
I think it looks like a kid drew next to me. Like, I like this shit for whatever reason. This is the kind of stuff I like. I like classical stuff as well, but this is the shit I like. So it'll get weirder, and perhaps there'll be answers. And I think it'll probably make more sense at a certain point when you start to see where it's going in terms of there's like basically there's two competing narratives. For those who haven't read it, it's called Kanye West is Dead, and you're going to be in two timelines, current 2022 and 2003. So, and it's going to go through both of those kind of in a parallel way, jumping back and forth with two major events that happened to the protagonist, Kanye West. There's a person whose name Shane Cashman, who is related to me in some regard, and a lot of other historical events will kind of weave through it. So, yeah, it's been fun. I like it so far. So good.
All right. Well, I'm curious about like just as far as the conceptual approach that you're taking, because I'm like clearly the title immediately attracted me, but like because I don't really have much of as far as like a very, you know, deep understanding and knowledge of like the details with like Kanye's life, you know, as far as except for probably, you know, what's been most covered, which is kind of like, at least in our circles, which is kind of the Harley Pasternak connection of the what happened with all of that. And so I was just always like kind of struck by the social engineering sort of aspect of things, right? Because, you know, I read I was kind of like shocked and shaken out of the typical Hollywood agenda as far as the culture is concerned when I read Laurel Canyon McGowan's book, right? And right. Oh my God. Yeah. Like that just one, it kind of burst my bubble because I grew up idolizing the counterculture in many ways, which of course was a manufactured psyop, you know. It seems that way, right? Social engineering. But I was just curious, like what exactly drew you to this project? Because I'm not sure, like I said, what the concept overall is, but you know, I'm very interested in kind of the shadowy background with Kanye, just because I see so many of I'm not saying that he's not talented. He's a very talented artist, but and by the way, I listened to New Slaves and off Yeezus, and when I heard that, and because it, the College Dropout, and of course those are great albums, right? Like I loved it growing up, but you know, I wasn't like huge Kanye fan until actually later on. Nice. and now I do very much appreciate a lot of his work, but yeah, New Slaves I listened to and I was like struck by the lyrics, you know, and kind of I listened to it over and over again because I thought it was so valuable, just the message, you know, in general, I thought was kind of valuable, especially for the culture these days, right? And more modern generation. But anyway, I just want to kind of, you know, pick your brain a little bit as to that. But
yeah, I love Yeezus is one of my favorite records. It's like it's angrier than most modern metal and punk rock is today. It's like the most rebellious sounding, kind of gross, very minimal album out there. And what drew me to the concept of this album is I genuinely think Kanye is like one of the greatest artists, if not the greatest artist that's been around. You know, I'm a huge fan of Kanye's, and I have been since College Dropout when I first heard Spaceships and then Through the Wire. And then, you know, kind of just spent a lot of time constantly defending him. When I didn't, you know, it's not like I had to, but I'd be in conversations, whether it was in college or some fucking stupid party, and people say, they think, you know, they would tell me whatever headline version they heard about Kanye. And then me being a fucking autistic nerd would be like, well, no, it's not like that. So like, fucking decade plus doing that. Cause like, I didn't give a shit about Taylor Swift. I didn't give a shit about George. You know, I didn't give a shit about Jay-Z. There's all these things I just didn't give a shit about, but I saw someone that was trying to make something authentic artistically, and I felt like people were interpreting him in ways that were completely built, or like caricatures that the mainstream news, corporate press built up, you know, same shit they do to literally everybody, Marilyn Manson, Donald Trump, you name it. So then I never thought I would write about him though. And then the idea for this book came about like when I heard that song Monster off Twisted Fantasy, and I started writing, and I knew then it was going to be about Kanye West being dead.
Literally dead? Is that what you're saying? Like
literally dead. Yeah, because maybe this is coming out in chat in the part that comes out on Friday, but I kind of hint at it in the last part. Whole idea came from Kanye West car accident. What happened if he died in the car accident in 2003?
Right.
Kanye, that car accident kind of changed the trajectory.
Because that's the main, that's my main kind of connection to the theory at all is just kind of a tenuous connection to that idea that I've heard that he died and was basically cloned.
Right.
And just, did you, I'm not trying to derail you or anything, but I was just going to mention real quick. Did you happen to see, I saw Sam Tripoli retweeted the video of Jim Brewer talking to Roseanne about his take on what happened with Chappelle and how.
I want to watch that. I love Brewer. Dude,
it's amazing. It's only a couple minutes, honestly. Yeah. And as far as it's very revealing, I would say, at the very least, you should take what Brewer has to say and at least consider it, because I mean, you know how close that they used to be. I mean, and he said that when they were filming Half Baked and all of this, that pretty much that he had gone to this film festival and Chappelle goes and meets him at this film festival and takes him into a private room and he's freaking out. Mm-hmm. And he's this is when he's dealing with Comedy Central and he's having to go through all that crazy shit before he fled to Africa or whatever happened. Yep. And he's freaking out. And basically Brewer, the only thing that he'll divulge out loud is that all he can really say is that Chappelle was visited.
Yo.
So
I got to watch it, because this is the other half of your question. Yeah. Is you talk about Pasternak. We talked about clones. So my book for the past, since 2013, the whole idea was the car accident. And I was going to kind of go through that whole idea. But then I meet Kanye, and this is right after, the I Love Hitler stuff. And I'm spending the weekend with him. And it was a really great weekend. We were just talking shit, writing lyrics, all this stuff. Talking about politics, fatherhood. And, it's very possible that was a clone, It just so that person I was with was very much like the person that I had autistically watched, for years and years and years. And so what Brewer's saying is kind of relatable, because when I came home from being with Kanye, we would then spend a month and a half, 2 months, him calling me every day. We had very crazy long fucking phone conversations about all this shit. And so at that point he'd already known about my book idea. And I'm all right, I'm going to do this. And I'm maybe he's even going to want to be a part of it. Who knows? Right. But he liked the idea when I first told him in LA. Mm-hmm. And spent a month and a half talking. And in the background of those conversations is Michael Jackson, Prince, what happened to those guys? We're talking about Pasternak. We're talking about opportunity. We're talking about not trusting anybody in your circle, even the people you think you can trust who are fucking epic names, you might give a shit about or not give a shit about. And dude gets married, disappears. And that's it. And I've, in the past year, I didn't really talk about that part of it. Because I assumed that's his life. I was crazy to even be wrapped up in that orbit. He bounced. That's it. It was fucking awesome. But then a year ago, and I'm talking to a lot of people in that circle, and we're all saying the same shit. None of us have talked, not about that at least. And I'm just yeah, weird. And there was a specific date where shit just changed. So he did say things like, if I go away,
holy shit,
it might not be the same. And I will tell you,
oh my God,
I will tell you, like, when I went to Miami for his first listening party for Vultures, I was stoked because the story I wrote about him, the essay that I wrote about for Tim's website, was about how this dude can do no wrong. He can say the most flagrant shit and he will still come back and have a number one record no matter what. I mean, huge fan base. It's epic. And I wanted to go experience that. I wanted to see it just in the audience. I wasn't hitting him up. I just wanted to be in the crowd and vibe out to whatever he was making. And perhaps I might have written lyrics. I have no idea. They didn't make that, but I wrote a lot of shit for this guy. So anyway, Miami happens and I'm like, something is off. The whole thing. I couldn't really put my finger on it. I wrote a little review about it. I was stoked on the music. I like the aesthetics. I'm a huge black metal fan. I like Burzum. I like Mayhem. I like the story of Euronymous Bosch. I like the story about them eating the crazy brains. I don't want to. But that shit is insane. If anyone hasn't seen that documentary Until the Light Takes Up, I highly recommend watching that documentary because they're insane people that started the whole camera. And here's Kanye referencing all that stuff. But then it dawned on me about maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, I was like, oh, what bothered me about Miami is that this motherfucker was gone forever. The last like conversations we had on the phone all those times were about fatherhood a lot and about like not putting your kids around highly overly sexualized situations, right?
Oh gosh.
I have young kids. He's got kids. We talk about it a lot. And he would, and he also cried and screamed about it on, you know, you name it, fucking Tucker or whatever.
Right. And
I don't want my daughter on TikTok. I don't want her around these sexualized rap songs. And then it's like, oh, yo, it was 3 a.m. and his 10-year-old daughter was on stage listening to her dad rap about having one in the pink, two in the stink, or Nicki Minaj rapping about fucking dudes and they're smoking weed. I'm like, yo, what happened in 6 months that this dude, like, and the argument against me was he's allowed to make art. He's allowed to do this. I'm like, he doesn't need to make a Jesus is King record every time. I might be Christian. I don't need him to not curse. I don't need him to always make a Jesus is King or a Donda record, although I love those records. The problem in my eyes, after all the things we've talked about and the things I believe in still, is you never sacrifice your child's innocence for the art you make. You can do all the shit you want. You can say all the shit you want, but like, I don't understand what happens in such a short period of time for you to then backpedal on the most important things in your life when it comes to your kids. So that's like, what happened? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's not the Pasternak. Maybe it's drugs. I don't know. But it was really, once that clicked, I was like, something's weird. And then that kind of had then refocused a lot of the narrative I'm writing in the current tense of this novel. Because I have my own answers. You know, they're just, it's fucking fiction. But, and I have a wild imagination and I might be, you know, mentally ill for sure. But like, I was trying to make sense of it because I truly still to this day, no matter what anyone says to me, people get mad when I talk out about him doing the shit with his daughter, but it just doesn't make sense. I would never sacrifice my kid's innocence for anything I make. And I was listening to crazy music when I was 10. I was listening to Big Pun, West Side Connection, you know, a lot of black metal, death metal. That probably shouldn't have been. However, my parents weren't sitting me down or putting me on a stage at 3 a.m. telling me this is acceptable, right? Or they weren't, you know, promoting it to me. The kids are going to find it, and it's up to you as a parent to build the foundation for them to withstand.
Oh, I mean, you don't find Ice Spice, call me Miss Poopy in my butthole. You don't think that's valuable?
I mean, sorry. I love doing Tower Gang every week, but I would never bring my kids to it. Like, say we did a live Tower Gang. I would never do that. That would be I wouldn't even think of doing that. That's not an appropriate place for my kids to be. That's fucking weird. You know, even my oldest is 14 and it's still like, no, that's fucking weird. Like, no,
they're not going to be innocent forever. You're not going to shield them from everything, but it's a very weird thing. For Kanye to become the Kardashian that Chris Kardashian or whatever her name is, Chris Jenner was to her kids, right? Yeah. Like, sexual. Yo, people thought I was fucking crazy. There were people getting so mad about me saying this, what I just told you. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he's got his daughter and all the kids, younger ones, in shirts that say fuck something. Jeez. I'm like, yo, something. I'm like, something's fucking off. Something happened to Kanye.
That's exactly what Brewer was hinting at when at the end of his sentence and statement to Roseanne, because he pretty much said essentially that he really questioned if that was him after he came back.
He looked different.
He looks different.
I love Chappelle from before he went away.
Yeah.
And it's not, dude, I think that shit, I mean, that shit happens. Whether or not it happened to them, I obviously can't tell you. I don't know. But like it happened to Richard Pryor. Same kind of thing to him. And then like they, in my opinion, killed Prince. Prince was on painkillers. Someone gave him a fentanyl and then he died. Michael Jackson's doctor went to jail for 2 years for killing him with propofol, the milk of the opiates.
One of the motherfuckers that was there was one of Diddy's like fucking main dudes, like a security guy.
I remember that. Yeah.
So there obviously are dark forces at play, and it's like I'm skeptical always of everything, even the things I really believe in this world we're talking about. Yep. But when homie is talking about Pasternak taking him out, wanting to take his kids away to literally his words, MK Ultra him, and then he disappears and he comes back mad different. It's hard to not look away and think anything other than what we're saying. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, it makes you wonder if they were too far over the target. I mean, look at the shit that's going down today. I do want to real quick point out to the audience. I just noticed we got flagged for age restriction for, I believe, like all the places we're streaming to except for Rumble. So remind you guys we're on Rumble. It's showing that we have zero live viewers, but I know we don't because I have all the people in live chat, but I believe that's probably due to the age restriction. But I just want to bring up to you. I just feel so. Anyways, for you guys, others, my episode 300. Go fucking share this out. Fight back against the YouTube censors. Tell them to suck a dick. But anyways, do you just feel like maybe he's getting a little too over the target? I think there's something to. I mean, I don't know what your current take is, Shane, on like a lot of the Israel Gaza stuff. I'm very much like I think yay. While people may not want to recognize it, it may sound silly. He was a integral part in turning the narrative on Israel, and I'm of the opinion that's for the better. Yeah. You know, I think we need to stop propping them up, and then maybe they'll actually be forced to make some peace within the region they live in. I think I know a lot of people won't be like, "Oh, it's racist," blah, 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 but I think he really broke people of this like idea of feeding into this victim mentality of like anti-Semitism. It's like, okay, dude, well, you're saying I'm mean. Do you have an argument for why it's okay to kill these children? Because that's what we're talking about.
When I agree. I have no allegiance to anyone. I hardly have allegiance to this country. You know, I love America, but I fucking hate this government. I hate both those governments. I care about the people on both sides who are innocent. But Kanye broke open like a very old scab that no one wanted to talk about. And when I was out there with him, I kept thinking about how it felt like the simulation was on fire, you know, because like everyone had this one idea about you, like Israel, we'll say Israel, but it's a lot of things. We'll say Israel. And all of a sudden he ripped that scab right off. It felt like the world was on fire. How dare he say this? How dare he say that? He's a hateful person. But it was kind of like a twofold thing, in my opinion. It was, first of all, it's okay to criticize anybody. It doesn't fucking matter who you criticize, especially if they're done wrong. I have a lot of issues with what Israel's doing during COVID. I mean, they were tyrants. Tyrants. Mm-hmm. Just Cuomo's and Whitmer's here. On the other side of that, it was him. He kept saying something that was so profound that like people kept taking his hate, but him saying the Jews should forgive Hitler is the most wild and beautiful thing. Because we all talk about how we hate victim culture.
Right.
This is like the main thing. Like, let's just not be victims anymore. Let's move on. Redemption. Let's move on. Try to come together, fix these problems. But he did it in his way, which is like, I'm going to drop an atom bomb with three words. I love Hitler. Destroy everything, make Alex Jones look nervous. A beautiful moment in pop culture history. And then bounce. And then it took like a year. And then all of a sudden people are kind of echoing a lot of the things that Kanye said. So, which goes in hand with what he's done his entire career when it comes to music, style. Although I really am not a fan of his style or any of his fashion, but people people love it. But like rapping, minimalism, architecture, you know, all this stuff, religion. I mean, he was part of a bit of a revival in Christianity amongst a lot of people who were atheists prior after hearing Sunday service and hearing, and that's dope to me. So just like everything else, it's just another example of him saying something that sounded crazy and people started to understand it a year later, which reminds me of something, you know, I'm not a Jay-Z fan at all, but one of the quotes he said about Kanye, which is true, is that he's the type of guy who's going to go over the mountain and take all the arrows from the enemy, come back and then report on it. And I think that still holds up. You know, whether or not it's Kanye today, I don't know, because I don't feel like he's that same rebel. He's like a rebel these days, but that's how he was for all the years that I liked him.
Yeah, he had to reel it in. He was triggering too much noticing. far too much noticing. And although, and yearning for president. Yeah, no, that. Ironically, I'm not a voting type, but that would be the only thing that I would even maybe consider voting for, really, to be honest. But voting's pretty gay aside from that. So if you're voting for something like Kanye, I don't really know what you're doing with your time. I feel like you can mathematically make an argument that whatever like your afternoon you were going to do with your afternoon is probably more valuable than whatever you did there.
Yeah. Start a fire and just throw some money in it.
Yeah. Just lie. I mean, if you're really concerned, the thing that always mind fucked me with voting is it's like, really my effect on other people's vote is of more significance than my vote. So all I have to do is lie to people and be like, I'm voting for so-and-so and just stay at home.
you're gonna do a psychological operation on them.
Yeah, I'm not going to the fucking, I'm not wasting my afternoon at a polling station, you fucking idiot.
Like they're gonna steal that shit no matter what, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, we're already age restricted, so fuck it. Yeah. All right, Austin, I believe you wanted to ask him about the clouds and why whether it's fake or gay.
Oh yes. Hell yeah. Yeah. So again, this is something that I've only kind of had like, you know, I haven't really dove into it as far as detailed research on my own, but I always just sort of kind of, you know, accepted at face value that they're clearly, you know, cloud seeding and like, and, but then once I saw John Brennan actually talk about atmospheric aerosol injection and stuff like this. And then I forget who it was, but I heard somebody talking about weather warfare and how the United States government actually had used, like it was like Project Popeye or something during Vietnam. And they're like trying to like wield like, you know, weather as actual warfare strategically against, like, they were sending, I forget, like just massive waves right off the coast just to like, it's totally crazy what they were capable of doing. And that was in Vietnam, you know, so that alone blew my mind.
Yeah. But so with Popeye, they tried seeding clouds to create landslides to take out the Viet Cong.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, and like you're saying, that's Vietnam, right? Right. So we have for sure weaponized the sky. And then look at, in other ways, look at Operation Sea Spray or Sea Foam that happened in San Francisco. Sometime after Operation Paperclip, which is always interesting to me, the things that we were, after we hired all the Nazis.
Right.
Like the dream team,
Mockingbird, MK Ultra. It's like everything there.
Of like tests on everybody. So in San Francisco, they were just dumping or spraying some virus, I think it was, or bacteria into the sky because they wanted to test how bio warfare would look in a in a city. So they just did bio warfare, but it was small, not too bad. But geoengineering is crazy, dude. Like, I don't know if the video is real yet, but I see a lot of people posting it today, that airport in Dubai with the planes like landing and they're in water and people are like, this is crazy. And then they're saying, which is, this is true, Dubai has been very open about cloud seeding the past, I want to say 5 or 6 years. So I think the fake clouds are a very real phenomenon. I think that, but this is the thing, is like, I think there's a hierarchy of fake clouds. Like, it's not just chemtrails. It's not just geoengineering, or we'll get some other ones. But like, I believe that there's vintage clouds that God made, and those do exist in the sky because of evaporation. And that's a very real thing. But unfortunately, those vintage clouds have been poisoned by forever chemicals that we just keep dumping into the atmosphere or into the water supply, or Fukushima, or the atom bombs, if you believe in atom bombs, you know, but like all these things that have been put into the atmosphere. You know, I grew up on the in the Hudson Valley, New York power plant, and they were just dumping, IBM was dumping into the river constantly. And there was a sign by the state that said, this is allowed to be a legal dumping site for IBM. That river is destroyed. That river is brown. It used to not be brown. And I forget the name of the chemical in it, but they would drag the waters, which also can't help that situation at all. But that's what they did by me. And if you understand evaporation, I would then believe that a lot of that shit ends up in the sky and it rains back down on you. And it's a simple poisoning of people. But that's just poison vintage clouds. Then we can talk about chemtrails. People want to debate those. I'm not talking about contrails. Those are the ones that evaporate behind the airplane in the sky. Chemtrails that I'm observing, others will, you've probably seen them. They're like drawn through the sky. And if you watch them, they will kind of like expand. I always say like the spider web from Spirit Halloween, you know, you want to put in your house. That's what it looks like. And it turns into cloud cover. And then it, more often than not, rains after that. Wow. I don't know what that is. There's a lot of theories of people who want to say it's just water vapor. Nah, I think it's poison. I don't know yet. I'm working on it. And then there's geoengineering, which is like the seeding is very, I think you play God, you destroy everything. You don't play God. Right. These people are playing God with the geoengineering. Shouldn't be, they're doing it out west a lot in America. I think for sure we're doing it out here, but I don't think they're as open about it. There's bills being passed to stop it. But the thing that's the weirdest to me, and the thing that we should be talking more about, is the solar engineering stuff that people like Bill Gates are talking about, like projects like ScopeX, where they want to dim the sun to stop. And we have people now, again, in San Francisco right now, sending like minerals into clouds to try to make them reflect the sunlight back up. I'm like, maybe not. Maybe not. Because what happened, you know, because this is all like, in my opinion, some type of like Marxist evil science, you know, because like, think of Mao. I'm spitting. I'm so mad about fake clouds right now. think of what Mao did with science during the Cultural Revolution, because he hated capitalism so much, which obviously lots of problems. He was like, in his deranged mind, we got to kill things that remind me of capitalism. The sparrow reminded him of capitalism. So in his mind, we kill all the sparrows. We're good. We're saved. It's a good riddance. He didn't realize that the sparrows, they weren't going to eat all the bugs that would have eaten the crops, right? So it's a Green New Deal like derangement shit where we're going to, it's like Thomas Sowell saying there's no solutions, only trade-offs. So Mao killed all the sparrows. The sparrows didn't eat the bugs. The bugs, they ate all the crops. And then there's millions and millions of people dying of famine. But Mao is saying it's all good, which is obviously similar things happen in Russia with Stalin. So there can't be positive outcomes to playing God, to making clouds, to poisoning us constantly with everything, and also trying to block the sun. So that's where I'm at with fake clouds, and I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, Namrock actually brought up where I wanted to segue this into anyways. He said that's a psyop. Yeah. They're spraying the salt in the sky to project the blue beam holograms onto. And I wanted to segue into that because for some reason this stuff got me thinking about blue beam. I've been recently on a tear trying to go through all of Austin's, all of his library. I'm probably like 90% done. And I went through the blue beam one. And that I was listening to it like, I don't know, a week or two ago when it was really like peak, like eclipse, you know, fucking Jew, you know, prophecy shit, you know, maybe popping off. And I still think that might be something. I mean, maybe they didn't do it on the eclipse. I mean, talking about blocking out the sun, there you go, making your own eclipse. And I think there's some, obviously, an interesting component there when it comes to these prophecies and essentially that they're fulfilling it on their own.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But is it really a divine prophecy if it's manufactured by the
state? It's like, I'm going to eat lunch tomorrow. Oh my God, the prophecy is being fulfilled. Exactly. He picked up the microwave. Right. But either way, the point I'm getting at is I also think that that got me really spurging that, like, yo, this would be peak blue beam time. Like, fucking beam up some. Like, I don't know if you saw that video recently, that weird blue Dr. Manhattan sparkly thing. Yeah. Like, imagine if they just did that and then blocked out the sun and had crazy clouds in the sky and then it descends into Trump. And now you could be like, he's the Moshiach. Fucking. And there you go. Now all the Christians are going to be like, oh shit, he's the Antichrist. But we're supposed to usher this in because we're weird, this weird dispensationalist part of Christianity that believes we need to help the fucking shit pop off. So we're sort of Team Antichrist, but not Team Antichrist. And now we're in this weird, you know, that would be the peak way to kick off Bluebeam, really.
People need to be way more discerning, and especially Christians. Like, you know, I know a lot of Christians who it's like they will immediately trust someone who says they're Christian. I have met so many bad Christians or people who pretend to be Christians. Mm-hmm. You know, you got like just because they are identifying as something you think you obviously think is good, you shouldn't just immediately trust them. And I see that as I'm scared of people who are going to see a fucking balloon from Party City in the sky and start believing things. I mean, it's like there's a lot of weird sects of religion that will, they want the rapture to happen. They have a certain date in mind. They'll stand on the roof and wait for it. People need to be now more than ever way more discerning with the realities because they're turning the sky into a green screen. I think so. You know, and everyone, and then with AI, people have live in completely different universes now because they'll believe an AI video. And they'll go forever believing that. And then if I tell them that was fake, they think I'm an idiot. I'm like, we're interdimensional now.
I just think that the blue beam aspect of as far as why did the Disclosure Project seemingly run parallel almost perfectly with like the War of the World right after the War of the Worlds happened. And that was like a behavioral, you know, research
for those funded who aren't aware, by he's referring to when what was it like the 40s, 50s, 60s, when the radio broadcast with War of the Worlds,
and people were shitting their pants. They thought they were actually being invaded by Martians, and you had like farmers like
you listen like, to that fucking radio broadcast though, and the way it's being broadcast, you're like, yeah, I could get it if it's my main form of communication, and you're literally doing they this like well this just in. You're like, what the fuck?
Great troll.
It's so 100%. But that was all funded by this Rockefeller Research Project.
Yeah.
And then they, guess what, later fund the Disclosure Project with Dr. Stephen Greer. And and that all like just perfectly, pinnacles and climaxes like together at once to where it's being seeded into, you know, the mainstream as far as I'm concerned. And it does seemingly fall perfect into the outline of Bluebeam, as far as I was concerned. And then when you have, I think there's almost a direct relationship when it comes to, I think a lot of this seems to have been like socially engineered out of Tavistock or, you know, the Frankfurt School, because it really does seem like there is a playbook here and it involves, you know, the four stages of Yuri Bezmenov's ideological subversion and you know, subverting the education system and, you know, compromising the Board of Education. All of that has already taken place, it seems.
Yep.
And it seems like this was all kind of, I don't know, forming at once. And in my opinion, too perfectly intertwined for it to be coincidental in many ways, especially with the overlaps of the funding and the people involved and the different policy steering organizations, you know, that led us to this point. But I mean, my point being is that that's where the entire climate agenda came, that as far as the Fourth Industrial Revolution, Agenda 21, you know, which is just rebranding for the Great Reset. That's what it seeming, as far as I'm concerned, the report from Iron Mountain, Operation Lockstep, they're all the same thing, it looks like.
Yep.
And go ahead.
Oh, I totally agree. And that's when I talk about my like idea of the simulation, I don't believe like the computer one. Jose's heard me say this field before, but like what you're saying is that, right? It's that people, I call them the engineers of the simulation, have created this reality, fake reality, to make a lot of the large portion of the population believe in a false narrative, like with predictive programming and all this stuff, right? And I think it predates even like Blue Book stuff. You know, you talked about Laurel Canyon and that mountain observatory on Laurel
Canyon. Lookout Mountain Laboratory.
I just drove by it. I was just there.
Get the fuck out of here.
I was on Laurel last week. I was there. I looked at Frank Zappa's house. I looked at all that shit. Wow.
I got to go. I'm not very far, honestly. Yep. I need to go.
You have to go. It's the whole mountain is like a monument to psyops and counterculture.
Dude, it really is.
So that mountain observatory, it's funny because I know people who live on that mountain, right? And last time I saw them, they told me it was there, and I just started reading that book at that point. And mm-hmm. So they're like there, and you could look through like this gated mesh fence, and supposedly Jared Leto owns it. I think that's where they call Leto clones. But
some sort of weird cult or some shit too now, I think, or something.
Yeah. What the
hell? But it's huge, right? And now, so when I was just there the other day, it's all blacked out. You can't even like look at it anymore. But it's huge. It's huge. And supposedly, I mean, is it in the book that it says like maybe 20,000 propaganda films were filmed there? And like big time stars like Marilyn Monroe was there. And I forget if this is in the book as well, but or maybe from fractured research after that book. But in terms of narrative and in terms of building perception or public perception, Robert Mitchum, old actor from the 40s, 50s, known as like a bad guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Book said this, like supposedly the story with him, the whole narrative, he was the first celebrity ever arrested for having possession of weed, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this new theory that they're saying is that was all pre-planned. That they knew he was going to be arrested, that they put the weed there, and he knew because they wanted to create a bad boy image, which then is a one small tentacle of the whole thing that observatory was doing.
Right.
Which we don't know the full extent, but they were pumping out propaganda with Hollywood, which again, like, or not again, I don't think I said this yet, but like, there's no distinction between Hollywood and fucking the government and the propaganda they pump out, which then to your point is why we have predictive programming. And they create these stories to either drive you crazy, make you crazy for connecting the dots, or to prepare people slowly for whatever bullshit they're going to roll out. But it seems like we're a freight train that's completely off the rails. And I don't know, we're in like a new like world now where you can decide whatever reality you want to choose. You can live in that world. If you want to believe it, good guy, you can be in that world. If you want to believe that Gaza's the good people, you can live in that world. A lot of room for nuance, right? And it's it is slowly happening, you know, over the years with the constant 24/7 news cycle we're in, where we're trapped in this like election campaign, and it's everyone's fractured. Trump, Biden, Netanyahu, fucking you fucking name it, Kanye, whatever. And it's very tiring, and it's driving everyone insane. But it's fun, and we get to talk about it, and I love it.
Yeah, I do. That made me think of, we talked about like the Diddy and like some of the stuff with Hollywood and the distortions that happened there. And I think a lot of people downplay that and they're like, well, no shit. But like, if you really extrapolate from that and think these things through, this is how you end up with situations. Like, I know Austin's covered this on his show. For example, when Nicole Kidman's dad was getting, you know, essentially, he was getting bad press for essentially being some sort of part of a pedophile network, it seems like, kind of one of those highly connected people. Austin can probably speak on that more. And then Nicole Kidman came in and kind of ran cover using her celebrity to kind of be like, and completely flip the framing as like, oh, you know, people, why is everyone being so mean to Nicole? Blah, blah. She's also able to kind of play on her contracts that she has to like reduce its like media exposure. And so it's like, that is how these things work, is you have these people in place, the Kanyes with their handlers, that when certain things happen, they either don't say anything or they say certain things. I mean, I'm sure every player is differently, but at the end of the day, the players are controlled so that you can, you know, have maximum control of the narrative, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think that the powers that be like dead off on the idea that they can get away with anything. Like if Michael Jackson, Prince, Kanye, JFK, if they're not safe, like obviously you're not safe. Like, right. No one's safe from like their tentacles. And it's pretty crazy, you know, because I mean, I really
it is. Look at Mountain Laboratory.
There it is. Look at that thing. Good God, dude. And like, there's like tunnels. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of underground shit happened in there.
They connect to other properties that were a part of that scene at the time, which I found insane. And some of them, I forget. Damn it, I forget. Because one of them was basically a party house, very similar to the cabin. Yeah. And then they claimed that Frank Zappa's cabin was also potentially connected to Lookout Mountain Laboratory through one of these cave systems, because there's a whole lot of different cave networks that are set up in that same area. And there is a like a Navy exit, you know, literally in through one of these networks from Lookout Mountain. And did you know that the guy that bought that property first, right when the government sold it, he claims that he has evidence that, which is insane to me, that they would leave evidence of this behind, but still, that in one of the theaters where they filmed at Lookout Mountain Laboratory, that he claims that's where the moon landing was faked.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dude, anything's possible.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on, you brought up the point about how they just kind of flagrantly get, you know, they take pride and be able to get away with anything. Have you, I mean, I don't know, maybe you have, Austin, but I don't know, Shane, have you heard about that Kekowa militia thing that popped off recently? I don't know if you've seen any of the coverage of that. Radix has had some good coverage, and Ford Fisher, who's another journalist. That's the only one that I've seen cover it, really. I
could be wrong, but is that the people who said they found a CIA or plant inside their group?
Yep. And it was essentially looked like a Whitmer type situation. He kind of slipped into this militia group, started saying stuff about like explosives, like stuff that was like clearly like over the line of like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? And then I guess they kind of like told him like, you know, yo, chill. And they're like, if you keep this up, like, we're going to like, you know, just let the world know, whatever. And they did. And they let everyone know like, yo, this dude's been in our group. I don't know what the fuck his deal is. He said openly, like when he was with them, that he was in the CIA. He framed it as like, I can be like your inside guy. Because that is like, oh, historically speaking. And it sounds silly, but historically speaking, especially if you look at like the late 90s, like Patriot movement, that was like, they were friendly with like some of the feds of like, oh, you know, some of the Patriots, some of the white hats within the organization, right. Like they're, you know, they're our inside guys because they're true patriots or whatever. So there are some people that still have that like sentimentality. And I mean, it sounds ridiculous. I would be like, get the fuck out of here, Fed. But like, you know, either way, they did were like, what the fuck? And they end up exposing him. And then he like then fucking what faked his death with like obituaries and stuff. And then it gets weirder. Then eventually after all this stuff, after like the fucking, you know, literally making fake obituaries and stuff, then they ended up fucking, he got charged. Like, so they just recently, he actually went to jail. I don't know. I mean, it's still really early. So it's just like really wild. That's like,
right.
Like, how are they framing this guy? Cause when they look in this dude's credentials, he used his real name. Wow. Like, so he tried to like, I don't remember if he changed one of his social media names later after he tried to act like he was dead. It's a whole fucking to do to get to that little aspect. But either way, it's like very flagrant. Like his dad's a fed too, like very, you know, glowing. And it's, so it's like, it's very wild. Like, did we just catch like a fed in the act? I mean, it's still very early, but it's just, it's wild.
I think they're everywhere. I think we probably follow some. They probably, I think they probably have big accounts. Like you should, like the way I was saying about being discerning of reality when it comes to like Bluebeam and shit, apply that to fucking Twitter. And like, I forget you said,
yeah, Destiny's a fed for sure.
Who?
I said Destiny's a fed for sure.
Oh, shit. No shit.
Dude, I'm
just kidding. I don't know. But at the very least, like, let's be real. Even if he's not a Fed, he completely takes all the Fed talking points.
He reminds me. I don't know who you're talking about earlier about the CIA who was making the rounds, that agent. Is it the guy with the long hair? Who did like the
podcast? No, I don't know what you're talking about. You're talking about what we were talking about in the pre-chat, where I was talking about that one guy who got James O'Keefe.
No, but... no, I don't think so. No. It was. There's a guy who's been doing interviews lately on different podcasts who claims to be former CIA, and he's got long black hair, and like he talks about the masks that they would wear and shit.
No just, shit. Are you serious? I didn't know about this guy.
Oh yeah, he did like a Lex Fridman thing. He's on a few bigger shows. Oh,
of course he would.
He's a total fed.
Yeah.
It is hard though, because it's like there have been some characters in the past that have come out that were prior feds that then seem to be genuine characters later on. But it's like, I'm sorry, like if you are literally in an intelligence agency and you're like, hey, I'm one of the good guys now. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna like be your enemy, but I'm gonna like kind of side eye, like, what the fuck are you doing over there?
I'm gonna take notes, but you're staying at a distance. And like, I always forget his name, but there's an old CIA guy who used to talk about like Operation Mockingbird, maybe from the 80s. I always forget his name, but like, I'm like, when I'm watching stuff like that, I'm thinking, why are they able to tell us this now? What new thing are they doing behind the scenes that they want to distract you from? So same thing applied to this guy I'm telling you about, the long black hair, who's like, you know, why are they telling us this now? And why is it okay for him to say it? What new crazy AI clone psyop have they cooked up in whatever observatory they have now?
Right. And it would be one thing if it was just like a couple examples of direct connections to the highest levels of military intelligence, you know, but like, I mean, and it would be far less compelling if it weren't as many. But when you go through the list of the actors and the musicians, and I mean, plus, you know, the direct connections between the Golden Penetrators and people like Dennis Wilson with Charles Manson. And, you know, man, I mean, it seems like and that even has like origins to like it has direct connections to the origin story of the hippie in general and the style of the hippie. It's just so crazy how all of that perfectly formed in Laurel Canyon right there at this cultural epicenter that created the counterculture
and then take was it Weird or Wild Scenes, I always forget, of Laurel Canyon,
and Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon,
pair that with Chaos, right?
Oh god,
Hill's Book. And then they created the counterculture, they created a certain look to discredit the anti-war crowd. And then they created, in my opinion, in Tom O'Neill's opinion, and probably anyone else who's read Chaos, they created a monster that could run amok and murder people.
The death knell in the summer of love.
Yo, exactly. All of that like culminated while assassinations are happening, right? Like while they're doing all this wild shit.
They're just tying off all their loose ends. You know, on it, that's what really seemed to happen. And then right after that, Nixon has to resign because of Watergate. And it's like, really, like, I can't believe how many people, and there are different factions involved with different networks, but they all seem to coexist. Yeah, I don't know how well they do, but I'm talking like, you know, Hoover is sexually black, has sexual blackmail on McCarthy, and you know, and he's at the, you know, 1960, he's sitting JFK down and saying he's going to sexually blackmail him, you know, and then he's being blackmailed by Roy Cohn. Yeah. Meanwhile, you know,
the Mexican standoff of depravity.
It really is, man.
Mexican standoff of dick pics. Yeah. Well, yeah. All right, guys, we're going to carry on this conversation in the second half of the show into the call in portion. I'll bring up the call in number for you guys in here in a second. But I do want to take a moment to remind you guys that today's episode is brought to you by Nadeau Shave Co. Big Shave has been psyoping the American people for decades with their multi-blade razor scam. Eliminate razor burn, irritations, and ingrown hairs caused by deep penetrating multi-blade cartridges. I can attest to that. You guys know I don't shave all that often, but I do a little bit of edging, and I probably shave it, you know, off about once a month. But yeah, this really helps, and I'm someone who does have sensitive skin where it gets fucked up. Return to the traditional shave, guys. You don't need that expensive bullshit. Use the stuff your grandparents used to use, your granddad most likely, not your grandma. But yeah, this is good shit. I'm telling you guys, this is like super cheap. If you guys want to be able to, I mean, shit, this stuff, it's what says 75 for a year. I could make that stretch for probably two, although, you know, I probably shouldn't be saying that, so you guys can use it all up. But, yeah, use Jose at checkout for 10% off your order at nadoshaveco.com. Not kidding. This is good stuff, guys. All right, let's get into the call-in portion. I'm bringing up the banner for you guys. 941-281-5857. You can call in and ask whatever the fuck you want. Tell us whatever you want. Keep in mind, though, under this current logistical situation, you can only talk to me. My guests and like my co-hosts can hear you, but they can't. You can't hear them. So it's just me and you, basically. So keep that in mind. For those people out there that are, you know, tech savvy, let me know if you guys know of a way I can we can rectify that. But either way, we've got the call number set up. But in the meantime, we'll start kind of going through the chat, seeing what you guys have, what you want us to talk about. So yeah, between me and you, Austin, if you see anything, we'll bring it up. Or if there's anything you want to address from earlier in conversation, I got a few Christ and Kings, hi, all that shit. How does Shane feel about clouds? I think we covered that pretty damn well. What else we got? Great job, Austin, on the Jackman Radio podcast. Yeah, you did good on there.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
Let me see. There was a few. I'm trying to scroll through the old ones real quick. Oh, yes. Let's talk about Michael Jackson a little bit. Oh, never mind. I have a call in. You guys riff for a second while I set that up, okay?
All right. Yeah, so I had mentioned Roy Cohn because I'm just reading about him again before I even before I came on here, and I had found this this former NYPD detective who was pretty much, he was the ex-head of the department's human trafficking and vice-related crimes division in New York, and his name was James Rothstein, right? And he's been coming up in a lot of the things that I've been reading lately.
Interesting.
It's crazy. All
right, guys, we got the caller. Sorry, I don't know if I wasn't paying attention to what you were saying. All right, caller. You're on with on Already Dead with Austin, Jose, and our guest Shane Cashman. What you got?
Thanks for having me on. This is Alex Jones from InfoWars. I just want to say real quick, Jose, I love your show. You do amazing stuff. Already Dead is tremendous. Reminds me of Nancy Pelosi. Shane Cashman, you're a beautiful man. You do great work. Austin Picard, Underclass Podcast, is the greatest podcast out there. You guys are beautiful. Yeah. Keep doing your thing. Infowars.com.
Let's go, AJ.
All right, I'll see you. Thanks for the call.
I love it. I bet that was one of the Jackman brothers, dude. They were killing me with their impressions.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that was them. We got Horseshoe and Hand Grenades had a great deep dive into Michael Jackson. They posit there's no way he could survive those third degree scalp burns, and the second half of his life was I don't know what the second part is. I don't remember anything about that shit
from the
right? What
about when he was talking about Michael Jackson was filming a commercial and his hair caught on fire.
And that burn victim or whatever that they say was his buddy that showed up after his death or something. Did you remember that part?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
What the fuck is his name?
Interesting.
Damn it. I think I heard this on Tinfoil or something. I had to. Yeah. but damn it. I forget his name. But it was just like some weird, like almost childish name. But it was just Danny or something like that. And I don't remember his last name. But anyway, he appeared on like Larry King Live or something. And he was like, a lot of people make the claim that that was Michael Jackson and it wasn't this burn victim or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And Dave, that was it. It was some weird ass name. That was it. Yeah. Yeah. Look into that. There's always some weird shit.
Like he named a kid Blanket.
Yeah, exactly.
I need another person. Call him Dave.
We got our buddy Bert. He said, Shane, why am I not supposed to whistle in the Appalachian Mountains?
Bertman. Shout out to Bertman.
Hell yeah, Bert. He's a fucking dude.
Whistle like a pig. Yeah. If you've seen movies, you don't want that.
Yeah. All right, Shane, I want to ask you, what the fuck is going on with your new show? I'm just asking because apparently I still have a flight credit because I was supposed to go up for that Yiki episode. So I don't know what the fuck's going on with that. I'm gonna be completely frank. I really feel like I'm just getting strung along at this point, but I don't fucking know.
About that. I was literally thinking about that today. Could you have done it yet? And it got delayed or some shit. So
yeah.
All right.
I mean, I was told it's happening for sure, but it's also, I was told like, what, fucking probably 2 months ago that in a week I'll have a date for you.
Yeah.
But at some point it's like, I don't know. I'm not trying to throw shade. Maybe I get it. People get busy. Maybe, but I mean, I don't know. I don't have the rapport that I have with Cassandra, so I can't give as much good faith. So I don't fucking know. Right. Either way, I know it's been a long ass time, and I haven't heard shit. So I you know, just feels like a ghost. Feels like, you know, before I got married, and you know, bitches just stopped talking to me.
Oh my god.
So just being frank with the audience so they know where that's at right now. I will say it's my pinned tweet, so if you do want to make it happen, comment to be like, hey, when's this happening? Don't be a dick, because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There's probably a million good faith reasons I could give. But from my perspective, it's like I haven't heard shit.
That was supposed to be you and Bertman, right?
Yep, me, Bert. It was supposed to be, but it was always up in the air from the start. Tanya was all supposed to come with us, and I believe this has been announced publicly, so I'm not like stepping on anyone's toes.
Right.
I'm not gonna give like the logistical reasons, like personal, because that's on her side of it, but that was always like kind of up in the air. And then she wasn't able to make it work, and so I mean, if she ever wants to talk about it, she can. She might very well come back on the show at some point. So it was just gonna be me and Bert, but we've talked about it enough. Bert did a big deep enough dive. I've definitely looked into it in the larger aspect of the story, so we definitely could have done a good episode. But
so if it makes you feel any better, to answer your original question, I was supposed to have a show for 3 years. So, you know, it's been like they're building a whole fucking thing and I got this room and it's about to happen. But for 3 years, we've been talking about it. And it's like, yeah, soon. But I think it's actually happening soon. And you got fucking great on that show.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been a lot of fun. It's in an old haunted house in a very small room that I painted kind of creepy like. And I'm stoked on that. So we've had meetings recently. This is randomly, and this is not on purpose, and it's not going to help whatever Freemason people think I'm Freemason from that.
Oh no.
So, but we randomly had our first meeting during the eclipse.
Hell yeah.
I did not fucking plan that.
Schedule that.
All of a sudden we're in the studio and it's dark outside and I'm thinking, why is it dark? And then it dawned on me that the eclipse, but it made sense for that show. But yeah, Inverted World Live, it's supposed to be Sunday evenings. I think it's 6 o'clock Eastern time. And we're just going to go talk shit and talk about all the weird stuff. So I'm looking forward to it finally popping off.
No, I've been looking forward to it for a while. I would hell when we were, this was like, it's looking like it was going to happen. I did throw your name in there. I think I even mentioned something to the booker like, hey, you should bring Shane in because I'll be quite frank. I mean, I'm very appreciative of all that Tim's done and like, you know, putting me on the show and stuff multiple times. I would much rather be interviewed by you, to be quite frankly. So I was like, you know, I'd like to have him there. So for this, because, you know, he can be kind of the skeptic sometimes. So it's like, you know, I mean, maybe that's me being a little bit selfish with the story and that like, you know, I want someone just to be like, yeah.
You know what?
Yeah, I did his show, and I forget what it was because, you know, I'm on there frequently talking about my skepticism of the moon in general. And he did say if we went to the moon, and I was like, that's a fucking big step for that guy because he did a lot of shit for fake clouds and the moon stuff. But I am very sincere. I mean that shit. And I think sometimes I say it on shows like that, and I get a laugh. But I'm like, I'm not fucking joking, people. Like, I'm literally telling you, I think the clouds are fake. I'm not joking. This is a real scourge on our planet. But I'd love to do that show with you for sure. Yeah. And whenever mine's up and running, you'll be on that. Both of you guys will be on that.
No, I'm definitely looking forward when that pops off. I do think it just feels right to have like a conspiracy outlet over there. I've thought that for a while. You guys have what, like a culture outlet with a culture stuff with, no, I guess culture war sort of is that as well. You also, I was more thinking pop culture crisis.
The culture war has been fun for me just because we can do 2 hours more conversational like this. And we had like, you know, whether you like him or not, Ashton Forbes on, I have a lot of questions, but I like that conversation. That was one of my favorite episodes of that show. And I'll be back on Friday. I probably can't say what that is yet, but it'll be more down the line of shit I like to talk about. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I look forward to seeing what happens there. Let's see what else we got in the chat. Oh, I got Bert saying, I never started questioning Israel until people called me anti-Semitic for criticizing them. That's because you're a self-hating Jew, Bert. Yeah, I think you're part of the tribe too, I think, right?
Right.
So,
born Jewish. So I got a lot of problems.
Oh, no.
No, I know. Is this a Freemason sign? Fuck. But baptized last year in a river. So like.
So you un-Jewed yourself?
You washed it off. Yeah. All right.
Right off into the river.
Yeah. They took a chisel to the nose.
Oh my God. That's great.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm glad you lost your devil tail. So that's cool.
There's a nub. Yeah. You can't really get rid of the whole tail.
I mean, how conflicted do you feel, though, that now you're, like, holding communion regularly with the people that you used to drink the blood of their children? Like, do you feel conflicted about that?
I feel great. I slurped that shit right up.
Have you ever dug into blood libel? That is such a fucking weird, dark rabbit hole to go down.
I've been hearing a lot about it.
Yeah.
You say blood libel, all I see is Shmuley's face, and I'm done there. I need nothing.
Yeah, his existence is a blood libel, so that's fair. It is weird. You do get into that, and you're like, there are a lot of accusations, but then it's like there is like legitimate explanations to some of it too. So it's like history is written off. People look into it like, oh, you're just anti-Semite, and you're like. Okay, but like you had some weird, crazy sex, like that you guys like excommunicated that were doing wild shit. So like, wouldn't you just want to point to that and be like, that was just those crazy cunts being like, you're anti-Semite?
When my wife and I were squatting in an apartment in Brooklyn, it was an Orthodox and Hasidic Jewish neighborhood, and we were the only like non-Jews. I guess technically Jewish, but like me, not her. She's Christian, but like I'm covered in tattoos and she's wearing short shorts, so we're public enemy in this place. We're not the ones with the problem. There's Moyles. If you don't know what a Moyle is, you can look that up. Well, they circumcise with their mouth. It's disgusting. Yeah. What happened in this area? There's a herpes outbreak because the Moyle had herpes. This is one of my favorite images from New York News. Bloomberg was the mayor, and he's having a very serious meeting with the Moyles about the herpes outbreak. And and so like if you go look it up, but it's Bloomberg surrounded by Moyles with some headline about like the herpes situation. One of the greatest like things. It was either New York Times or maybe the Post, but shit's weird and dark and disgusting, and that guy's into it.
I like the little speech there with the face in the background.
Yeah.
It was very fitting. But yeah, look into the Sabbateans. That's a fun little rabbit hole to go down. And it makes you question what that means for today. What else we got here? If you look up, you'll know so often the fake clouds block the sun. Often at sunset was the best time to sun gaze. Yeah, that's why I was spitballing about the idea of blocking the sun, because I think a big component of... I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm a little bit talking to my ass here when it comes to the Jewish prophecy. I do think an eclipse may or may not play a part in that. That is commonly significant in a lot of religions. Yeah. And as ridiculous as it sounds, it is my understanding that they legitimately, at least some sect of Judaism, does think that when they sacrifice a red heifer and take over the old temple, which that would likely start a religious war, that is what will begin the age of Moshiach or signal Moshiach coming, which is the Messiah, or it literally will make him come. I know there's a multiple ways to interpret it, but it's still wild. And then when you juxtapose that with Christianity's understanding of prophecy, you're like, yo, I'm not even a Christian. So, I mean, people know, watch my show, but it's still like, when you know these things, you're like, that's pretty wild shit.
Conversations randomly with like different type of religious extremists who think we're in the end times. Like, I think the world is always ending. I think you inherit a world that's in its new phase of it ending. The world will end at some point. But, I met this guy the other day. He was driving home from the airport. He's a Baha'i. Baha'i faith. It's like a Muslim sect that has a new prophet past Muhammad. And he was a very cheerful man who escaped persecution in Afghanistan. But within 20 minutes, he's like, it's the end of the world. And like legit, like, you know, he's seeing all the signs, like celestial signs and stuff. I'm just like, damn, you know, it's everywhere. Like there's so many people who are, I think they want to manifest the end time, because in his religion, according to him, he believes that'll usher in a new great utopia, which Christians will believe that. There's different sects of different religions that believe that. But they want these things to be true, which kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's like they'll manufacture the end times thinking they can make it happen. If you believe in God, like God's going to do that. You're not going to do anything. You can't manufacture God's doing. Like you can believe in all you want, but it's like, to me, it's like playing gods. It's like making clouds. Mm-hmm. You go ahead and try to kill all the red heifers you want, or, you know, make all the clouds you want and block the sun, but it's not going to be God. That's just you.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it may kick off a fucking, it may really kick off Armageddon, but not the religious kind.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You could do that.
Because it is weird. I mean, a constant thing is like the big part of it is the temple, and that's kind of in all three of them, or at least, you know, it's obviously it's a big thing for the Muslims, their temple, but the Al-Mak, I forget what the fuck, which one it is, but that's the big one that they're focused on for like rebuilding a temple. That will clearly set off religious war. And for Christians, they're going to be torn in that one, because there are all the dispensationalists who are very much like, oh, we got to help it happen. And it's like, it's bizarre, because it's like in their eyes, they're helping usher in the Antichrist. It's just a bizarre mindfuck. Like, how do you as a Christian be like, I'm doing actions to bring on the Antichrist, and this is a good thing? You're like, what the fuck, dude? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's a mindfuck, because then someone could say, well, why is it good for God to do it? I don't fucking know. I'm not trying to go deep theology here. Yeah. Someone brought up, I guess you guys were talking about some spook earlier, Andrew Bustamante. I believe
I think that's the long-haired guy.
Yeah, I don't know much about him. What's going on with him? Is he's like saying weird shit? Like makes him sound like a legit glowy? Like just making bullshit up? Or
no, he if it's that guy that I'm thinking of, he's saying he's a former CIA agent who used to wear the masks and stuff like that. I think that's him. But when I saw him, he had longer hair.
Okay, handsome fella.
He's talking about, you know, putting on the CIA skin masks and whatnot, and he did that on Lex and a few other like bigger podcasts. So like I said earlier, when I hear that, I just think, what are they just doing now, and why is he allowed to go around on podcasts and say that? I personally believe that you can never be former CIA. You're CIA, right. You're CIA, that's it.
Yep.
You can claim to be former CIA, but you're never really.
If you're former CIA going on Lex Fridman's podcast, like I'm going to doubly assume you're probably a fan.
Mm-hmm. Like Lex. And-
I literally just got blocked by him recently. I literally don't ever recall ever interacting with him. Everyone was always like, oh, he's thin skinned and you like this or that. I'm like, I don't even think about him enough to fucking like anything related to him. So I'm like, whatever, but I don't know. I did always find him dry and very like, where'd this guy come from? Anyone know the Stephen Greer guy? For some reason, that got brought up.
That's
in the chat.
The guy that ran the Disclosure Project.
Yes.
And I guess they're saying he's literally contacting demons.
Well, I know he's the one that was hanging out with that, what's that chick's name? Demi Lovato, isn't that her name? That was
he's into aliens.
Yeah. And they were going out into the desert, and he has this whole system set up where he like, has people pay him thousands of dollars to go out, and they act as if they are contacting entities.
Uh-huh.
And he fully convinces these people who clearly, you know, have an incentive to be convinced. Like they honestly want it, you know, like, so for me, it's like some weird new age form of, you know, like weaving through this Disclosure Project, but also isn't she the same girl who said she was contacting entities and like talked about like some woke shit about that the
or they them, she was something weird. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Dude, it's just a trip. But yeah, Stephen Greer is like, he was hanging around with the Clintons, like when Bill Clinton was, and he's like personal friends with the Rockefellers, and that's where he got a lot of his funding, I think. But
don't trust it.
Yeah, I don't trust it at all. I mean, it clearly to me, it's like the modernized form of how we're going to integrate Blue Beam into, you know, just mainstream pop culture in a way, and it seems to be the case.
All right, Shane, do you believe it ultimately is a battle between the NWO anti-God and the Crown yeah. slash Church factions? I'd assume you don't, but I mean, that seems a little rudimentary, but go on.
NWO, I mean, I think those things are possible, but I think there's so many factions of evil happening at once right now that it's hard to like put evil in a silo. It transcends so many places and people that they're warring amongst themselves. They're warring against us. And it's just impossible to pinpoint the epicenter of evil.
Yeah. Unfortunately. I agree.
You know, about like, because I got really deep into as far as like the Club of Rome and Tavistock when I was looking into the Committee of 300, and I read Dr. John Coleman's book, and then I read some of Eustace Mullins' book about the world order, I believe, Our Secret Rulers, I think is the name of the book. But you know, if you look up those guys, by the way, that they love Hitler and they hate Jews, but it's just so ridiculous, you know, the way that they try and dismiss them at face value. Because if you listen to them, I never heard them, you know, profess those values in any way. But at the same time, what they were saying seemed to be dangerous and perhaps a little too close to the target, you know? And I know that I think Eustace Mullins had a direct connection to like the philosopher Ezra Pound or something anyways, it's very interesting because he kind of lays out an alternative version of history in a way where it's like the Royal Institute of International Affairs and Chatham House and all these different organizations were created in this sort of octopus network to really kind of launch, I would say, undermine the American Revolution. That was kind of like, I think that there were a lot of different, I think that many agendas were playing out at this time, but I do think that there was a serious agenda to compromise the establishment of the colonies, right? And so just hearing this alternative take and how they also kind of helped facilitate the United States in as far as even the American Revolution was concerned and the Civil War, and like helped finance that and through these organizations. But I think like, even in 1972, that they were like providing a real like framework for at this Club of Rome meeting. And it's totally insane, man, because that's where like they mention like the limits to growth, which really like ties in with the modern climate agenda and everything, and all these weird models of doom, right? Yeah. Which it's insane. And it's also when it's sort of spurred a lot of these modern takes. Like, for example, in 2016, like even as recent as 2016, the Club of Rome was seriously criticized over trying to promote the idea of a one-child policy in this paper, this pamphlet that they're like, they published and were circulating called Reinventing Prosperity. And it 100% promotes this one child policy for industrialized countries, leading to like immediately all these articles began circulating that that were like with titles like headlines like Having Fewer Children, a Solution to Climate Change. You know what I mean? And
I always forget this guy's name, but I wrote a story on Alex Jones, and when I was in his studio, he has like this giant book on his conference table by this guy. He's the guy who was in Obama's administration. Alex Jones and Elon Musk have both said that this is like one of the worst enemies of American people or people in general, which is a funny thing to think, because they at the time, Alex and Elon did not like each other at all or interact. Right. But it was, you know, the same person who said we should only have like one kid per family. It's going to save the climate. And it sounds like fringe ideas when we're telling this to like people out in the real world. But you're like, these people have been rolled up into giant administrations. And you look at the Emanuels, they're sick fucks too. Oh, Rahm Emanuel's brother, he wrote, I forget his name too, I'm horrible with names, but he wrote a whole article in The Atlantic many years ago on why old people should just stop taking care of themselves and die. And we don't really need an older generation. And I remember reading that article when our son was maybe one or two, so this was maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And my grandma lived with us. She had leukemia. We let her, we let her like leave Florida. This is during COVID, come live with us, took care of her. And my son is like getting like ancient, like wisdom from this 85-year-old woman, learning about all this shit. And I'm reading Rahm Emanuel's brother talking about why old people are unnecessary. And I'm like, I like to grow up around old people and hear all their perspectives from all the places they've been in their world, in the world. And so like you put that together with what Rahm's saying with like have one kids, it's, this is just elimination. They right. They don't like you. They don't want you around. They want enough of you to sell shit to and then plug you in the machine. The population bomb. Yeah. What's that guy's name?
Oh, what is his name? I can't read it.
That's one of those people. Yeah.
I read some of that. I'm not sure if I finished it, honestly, but I remember reading a lot of it when I was doing my Committee of 300 episode, I believe. And it's so insane because they admit using the Brookings Institute, the Institute for Policy Study.
Hey guys, I have a call in. Sorry, he's been waiting for a while. Yeah. Hey, Mersh, we have you here on Already Dead. I do want to remind you with the logistics, it's just me and you talking. They can hear you, but they can't talk to you. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. Well, my question is for Shane, so it's going to be awkward if I can't hear him.
Yeah,
I'm know. Just curious. Did he ever address the whole Eliza Blue puff piece controversy? Because I feel like he didn't, and I feel like he just kind of came back and everybody was like, nah, I would just give him a mulligan on that. And I'm curious if he's ever actually come out, retracted any of the stuff he wrote, and apologized for maybe being a little bit too attached to his subject matter.
I gotcha. All right. Well, for fairness, considering as I understand what you'd want to back and forth, if you want to just stay on the line for a minute, and then like kind of hear his response. I mean, maybe mute your phone so we don't hear the feedback, and then I'll let you maybe make a response or whatever. And then, but obviously we're not gonna do this back and forth telephone forever, but I feel like that's fair considering the nature of the question here. Go ahead, Shane. What would be your response to that?
Mersh is talking about, I think, one of the best stories that's ever been written, about someone named Eliza Blue, who I think Mersh loves that story, which is it's like honestly an honor. People still talk about that story 2 years. I haven't retracted anything. I still believe in that story. I love that story. And I'm happy he still thinks about it. It's amazing. So, and have I apologized? No, I've never apologized. And I have done a lot of interviews about it. I talked to Jose about it. I talked to Sam Tripoli about it. I can, if Mersh wants to hit me up, I'm happy to talk to him and send him all the links so he can be filled in on everything he wants to know about the greatest story that's been written.
All right, Mersh, I know there's
you're happy. I hear it. It's on a delay. But okay. He's happy that he wrote a puff piece about somebody who manipulated emotional people on the internet, did nothing to help human trafficking, and then made a bunch of money and fame off of it, and who's had a very, very dodgy past. And instead of writing that story that everybody wanted, he hyped that story. And then he went and stayed and wrote like three paragraphs about the French windows at her parents' farmhouse. Like instead of, I don't know, like getting to the meat of the whole issue that people wanted to hear about.
All right. Well, I'll let Shane respond. I would do suggest obviously maybe get him on your show or something to have an easier back and forth. I appreciate you calling in, Mersh. And I guess obviously you'll probably talk about this, but, all right, we'll see you around. Someone who I saw tried to call a bit ago, so call back. There we go.
That was fun. Right. I want that guy. I think honestly, this is the truth, guys, and I'll tell this to you now. I hired Mersh to say that. I'm a fan. I told him just do something that's hateful against me because it drives up views, and he's a good guy. I like him, and. He's my new favorite person. You should all subscribe to him on Rumble.
All right.
the windows in that house were dope.
Oh man. By the way, until he cuts me off again, as fun, which is totally fine. Just to continue the conversation we were having, though, like I mentioned, the Brookings Institute is seriously implicated in a lot of this. As far as that, there was for sure, like, we have concrete connections to a deliberate strategy of undermining education in America that at least that I can point to. And I mean, like I was mentioning, it was also, I mean, it wasn't just the Institute for Policy Studies and Stanford Research Institute and Brookings Institute, you know, it was many more than that, but they were tasked directly with infiltrating the National Teachers Association in an effort to take full control of the system of education.
Dude, and look what they did during COVID. Remember, the Chicago Teachers Union putting out guillotines on the street.
One second, sorry. I'm going to do a finishing point. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I wasn't muted.
You're good, brother.
remember when the union put the guillotines out on the streets of Chicago because people wanted to open up the schools again? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you're going to kill us. They've had their fangs in the public school system for way too long, and parents outsourced their children in full to these public schools, to whatever these institutions are. And it's, I think, a lot of the reason why we're in the place we're in now, of widespread nihilism, overdoses, suicide, transgender shit, is rampant in young kids. So it's fucking horrible.
I have a caller here, guys. Sorry. Go ahead. Let us know who you are and what you got for us. Hello?
You guys are really gay.
Okay.
Okay. We're gay? Come on now.
Damn, I love bro. That. It's great. That was good. All right.
More call-ins like that, please.
All right, cool. All right. I got Kevin Brady said, Shane, I have a cult documentary I want to film. I DM'd you on Twitter. You want in? It's about 30 minutes from my house, and celebrities and Diamond Harris's are involved, Washington State. I assume you would need more details, but
yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen your message yet, but if it happened while we were recording, I haven't looked, but yeah, that sounds good. I like cult documentaries.
All right. Austin, this is, I guess, for you. Fire Pissy asks if she's wondering if you could break down the Officer Tippett shooting. I get really confused around that point. I will say, the Officer Tippett aspect of the Kennedy shooting is like an area that I'm just kind of like, whatever. Like, it's like a weird spot a lot of people get sucked into, but I just never really like cared. Like, what? Why is it significant? But I don't know. Maybe you can explain the significance of the Tippett angle, you know?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Tippett saw some things he wasn't supposed to, but at the same time, I say that, and then I found out that there are all these connections from, like, when I've been researching Watergate and all of this, and it's so many ties to a lot of the same players of this time. And so it makes a lot of sense in reality, but I didn't realize that Heidi Reichen, who's seriously implicated as running a sexual blackmail operation on behalf of the mob for the CIA, and was directly tied in her black book of sexual blackmail with members of the Nixon administration, like John Dean. I mean, she literally lived with John Dean's girlfriend before she moved in with John Dean, Mo Biner Dean, or whatever her name was. And I just find that insane because they were so close. And but what I found out was that there's all these connections to the JFK assassination with those same people. Heidi had interacted with all these different figures that were linked to the assassination, including Texas businessman Clint Murchison Jr., the principal owner of the Dallas Cowboys and son of Clint Murchison Sr., the Texas oil baron, Joe Campisi, the owner of Campisi's Egyptian restaurant in Dallas, who reportedly hosted Jack Ruby, Lee Oswald, Dallas cop J.D. Tippett. So I go, whoa. When I saw J.D. Tippett was actually there, allegedly, that he was hanging out in Dallas at the club that Barry and the boys were all at too, because it seems like these were Ted Shackley's boys of Operation 40, and they were all directly involved in the JFK hit. And I know that Tosh Plumlee, who was advanced pilot, he's come out publicly now. He's friends with St. John Hunt, I think is his name, E. Howard Hunt's son. And Tosh Plumlee's come out and said that he flew E. Howard Hunt and one of the hit teams in there to Dallas that day. And then, like I've been saying, I've said this multiple times, that Barry Seal's wife has said that he was the getaway pilot in Dallas that day. And then I have this, right, this confirm, it sort of, you know, reinforces what I had already was leaning toward. But to have that additional connection with J.D. Tippit, even being at the club with, I mean, and it, you know, there were others there, you know, and this was at November 21st, 1963, you know, and a dinner was also being hosted by Murchison Sr., who was hosting a party for J. Edgar Hoover, Richard Nixon, H.L. Hunt, Fort Worth millionaire Sid Richardson, and Vice President Lyndon Johnson. Crazy. Dude.
It, when you talk like that about that situation,
yeah,
it's no different than the Laurel Canyon situation.
No shit, man.
All these dots, there's something, everything is infiltrated by the evil. In this case, the fucking government and all this evil actors. But like, you know, we could talk about gangster rap. We could talk about modern art, Jackson Pollock, news, Twitter right now, you know, mm-hmm. like. Everything's infiltrated, and you have to just be very aware. But yeah, when you talk about stuff like that, it makes us sound, you know, I always feel crazy when you start connecting dots and you're doing research and people look at you like you look, you know, schizophrenic. But these things are, unfortunately, they happen. And then you have to catch yourself being like I catch myself easily connecting dots that maybe not don't have to be connected because right. my, you know, Charlie Day in front of the
dude. That's my life. Yeah, I swear to God.
Dang.
Which is right, we got in the chat, you guys are fucking weak. Don't bring on shit guests if they don't want to get the shit things they've done. We let him talk. I've talked about this with Shane before, and honestly, the stuff that you guys seem to want us to talk about is the stuff I find the least bit interesting about the Eliza story.
So, I honestly
and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying like I get some people some of the angle of the people that are upset about some of the Eliza stuff. I understand all of it. It's just that like to me, it just kind of a lot of it was just gay drama. And for me, I'm like I like to dissect what I find interesting, and I didn't find the gay drama interesting. I found the like oh look at these fucking this network of people behind the scenes doing this doing that. And like for me, whether the fuck, you know, Eliza was, you know, either is stretching the bounds of what the truth was or was straight up lying or some combination. Like, I don't know. I guess it depends on what she's lying about. I never saw anything that was like she was a Fed. So,
right. Like, there's different ways that people think about that story, whether it's they hate it because of the Eliza thing. I should have asked Mersh, like, what makes it a puff piece, too? Like, what you read about it that made you think that? I don't know what the Windows comment is, but, like, I'm always curious how much you read before it got nuked off
the internet. I read the whole thing. I found it very interesting.
Well, I know you did, but, like, there's people who have different opinions of that whole thing. And I spoke a lot about that story, or with you, about the difference between objectivity and subjectivity. And, like, this is my opinion, this is that. And like I do with anything else, I like to talk to people who are getting fucking the internet guns pointed at them. That few months run was insane to be with, from Kanye, Eliza, Carrie Lake, you know, all the courtroom shit. But I get why people are mad. I fucking love that story still. And I feel no remorse for that story, but I'm happy to talk about it. And if Mersh is really that upset about it, he can totally hit me up, and I'm happy to talk to him about it like I am with everybody else.
but yeah, no, it was not me avoiding the, I mean, I guess in a sense I was avoiding it, but avoiding it in the sense that I find it fucking like the stuff that you seem to want us to talk about, I don't care to talk about. So it's like, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't know. Like, so for me, the like, you know, kind of trying to generate rage and whatever, like, that's fine. I laugh at some of that stuff sometimes. Like Mersh's, you know, takedowns of Crowder in the past have been phenomenal, but that's not really the kind of content I'm trying to do personally. Like, but I do find it fucking hilarious when he pointed out, you know, way ahead of the curve that, like, look how fucking gay and reprehensible this dude is. Like, so, like, and it looks like maybe he is pretty gay and reprehensible now with stuff that's coming out. So,
in terms of that, shout out to Owen Benjamin sharing that shit recently. So,
Owen's the best.
Owen is on another fucking level.
Dude, he's awesome, bro.
Yeah.
I love it. His content's so great.
I get people who do that content. That's fine. I'm just saying, like, that's just not what I do here. So,
you know what's funny? Speaking of Owen and the Kanye shit, I don't know if Owen even knows this, but like, there was maybe a few weeks or a week of, I was in a group chat with Owen Benjamin and Kanye writing prayers.
Wow. Like,
I don't know if Owen knew who I was at all. It was just my number, but that was hilarious.
What a life, dude.
And me taking direction from Kanye. There's a few other people in that group chat being like, you got to write this prayer. And then Owen adding jokes to it. I don't think I had those anymore. I lost them on my phone. I hope someone has those.
That is amazing.
There was one or two posted to Truth Social, I think, through Kanye. And the prayer was also asking Trump to be his vice president. Amazing.
That is funny, man.
Well, all right, guys, this has been we're about an hour and 40. I think we're probably ready to start wrapping. Shane, you want to let people know where they can find you? It's been a pleasure having you here for 300th episodes. Good to have a homie on for a mile marker.
Thank you, guys. This was a blast as always. You can find me at Shane Cashman anywhere. I got this Kanye West is Dead book I'm serializing on Twitter. That comes out every other Friday. The next one, the part three, is this Friday. I have another book on my website, ShaneCashman.com. It'll start shipping soon. That's Yes, Your New Baby is a Savage. That's my parenting book. It's very serious and peer-reviewed. I've studied. Awesome. I've been a dad for 8 years, so I'm an expert. I know all there is. And you can find all my other books online at ShaneCashman.com. Thank you, guys.
Of course, man.
Coming on, bud.
Great to meet you, Shane.
You too, man.
You can find my work at the Underclass Podcast on Instagram, at Underclass Pod on Twitter, and basically any audio streaming platform, you can find it at the Underclass Podcast.
Yeah, I want to give a big shout out to my patrons for helping make this happen. If you're a patron, you get access to, you can come on for the StreamYard for these and talk to our guest or us. But yeah, also I want to give a shout out to my sponsors. I have my co-hosts on Tower Gang at Tower Gang Toad, at Abrogate D's, Kevin B. Clark, a full-time guitarist and private musician in the New York area, at Zoveerack, then at _infinite zeal, then Jacob Daniel of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast. He's actually my guest tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Christian Zionism and why it's bullshit. And I have Tim Tuttle at Jolly on Klebold, then at Stinky Sock 420. He's a singer of a band named Bender, which is a metalcore band. So if you like the kind of music I do, I'm sure you'll dig that. Big shout out to you guys. Appreciate you making this possible. Follow me on Twitter at Tower Gang Jose. Like, share, subscribe, comment, all that good gay shit. And we are out.
Peace.